Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Fulpen. Today we're going to talk about the All-Star Game process in regards to why All-Star Games are important, really the past All-Star Games that had been involved, how those guys were able to rise up the draft board with really, really good All-Star Games, and you know the future of All-Star Games and kind of any other kind of news and notes. Now, Neil Stratton, he was in 2007 was the personnel director of the Instajuice game, and then in 2008 was the executive director of the Hula Bowl. And I've from 2007 to 2013 worked for the Texas First Nation game, and then also in 2012 the Players All-Star Classic. So, you know, Neil and I have been involved in a number of All-Star games, from the personnel side to the overall, putting together an All-Star game. So I've got a lot of, insights, and we want to, share that with our audience. This year there will be only three All-Star games, the Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine game, the NFLPA game, and those type of levels of All-Star games. And Neil, I think this is the lowest since, I know you track these things, it's been a number of years since we've only had three All-Star games. Any insight on how many years we'll only have three games?
I think it's been 6 years since there were only three games, and it's really disappointing because that's just a lot fewer opportunities for young men to potentially get identified as prospects by NFL teams. And I know it's going to be a negative for a lot of agents who've gotten used to being able to present their players in this way and really showcase them. So it's a negative. It's unfortunate, but unfortunately the economics of these games is really difficult, and it's not altogether surprising that some of these games that had been running in the last few years have fallen off just because of the economics and the finances of things.
Yeah, definitely, and that's where the issues are, is that you've got to find sponsors, to be able to pay for these games, to be able to bring the guys in, to have the coaching staff, to head for this facility. And at the end of the day, it's a benefit for, number one, the agents, number two, the NFL teams, and number three, the players, a lot more than it is for the guys who are putting together the All-Star games and kind of running, those. As we go through the kind of the process, I know you have some tips for some, agents in regards to getting their guys in the games and how that kind of, how the process works. Kind of let's kind of run through those.
Okay, well, I think there are four things you have to remember if you're a contract advisor who's trying to get a player into a game or who aspires to do that. I think number one, you got to know what games are being played. And you mentioned that early on. Year to year, it changes. The lineup is always in flux, and a lot of games are kind of run on a shoestring budget. And if you don't have that sponsorship deal, then you're looking at trying to come up with a way to spend anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000, $400,000 maybe, running the game by the time you talk about transportation and stadium rental and hotels and food and a number of other topics related to the game. And so knowing which games are being played is where you have to start. And as you mentioned, there are three games right now that are strong on the schedule. Maybe a couple more will come along as we move forward, but they're very iffy at this point. Anyway, those are the three that you need to know about. Number two, I think you have to know how to reach the directors. Usually there's one person who makes the calls on personnel. Now, the NFLPA game is a little different. They have regional scouts that are set up that kind of identify talent across the nation, and then they have one guy, Tony Softley, who's kind of over them, and he makes the final decisions on that. But you have to know how to reach them, and in addition to knowing how to reach them, knowing when to reach them. I remember when I ran the Hula Bowl, in 07, I probably started getting emails from some of the younger agents, the less established agents who didn't really know what they were doing. I started getting emails like in July and August. And all I could think was, we don't even know if those guys are going to be healthy come game time. Why are you sending me information on players so early? But I think a lot of people don't know how the process works, and they don't know when to really start approaching the directors, and they don't know really when the invites are going out and all those kinds of things. So there is a lot of just lack of knowledge and a lot of misconceptions out there. So you have to know when to reach out to them. The fourth thing, Justin, and you know this very well, is the invitation process is very fluid and it's not cut and dried at all. In other words, it's not a situation where a game just goes in and if you're the number three game, then you take the players 200 to 300 that are ranked there. It's not like that. Not like that at all. There's a lot of sway and a lot of, for lack of a better word, politics and a lot of who's available and who's interested in playing and who does the personnel director have relationships with in regards to the schools or in regard to agents that he's talking to or in regard to scouts. There's so many different ways that players are selected and invited. It's, you know, you really have to kind of run through it and almost do it yourself to fully understand that. So I think those are the four things you kind of have to know about the process if you really want to get a player invited or at least enhance his chances of getting invited.
Yeah, and I think all those points are valid. I think that the biggest thing is it's a competition, you know, and that's the thing when I was, you know, doing in the personnel department for the Texas First Nation game, and, you know, basically you're trying to compete against you get the best guys, you know, that you think can get drafted. And
right.
So was the, you know, the NFLPA game, the Shrine game last year when, you know, the game out there and the Medal of Honor game was, you know, running. You were always competing with the
right.
other directors. Hey, what relationships you had with the players, what you know, relationships you had with the different agents, et cetera there. So I think that's what the people need to understand. It's not just a, hey, take my guy and, you know, hey, you should take my guy. And I think that's sometimes, you know, agents feel like, hey, you know, I'm calling you, so you should, you know, you should select my guy to play, you know, play in a game. And so
right.
my always thing was, hey, you know, you always wanted to take as many phone calls from the agents and listen to their pitch. But, you know, also, you know, I think the agents need to respect, hey, those personnel directors and they have, you know, they're having a job and they're trying to create this business to be able to, you know, get sponsors in the future and get different people
mm-hmm.
involved. And again, once you're able to go sell that, you're selling, hey, last year we had 30 guys drafted, you know, the Texas First Nation game and 100 guys signed NFL contracts. And so you're able to then go to corporate America and say, hey, this is, you're going to be able to get involved with NFL guys before they're NFL guys and see, this is the success we've had, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
mm-hmm.
sometimes people don't realize, you know, that part of the game. It's, hey, I've had, you know, so-and-so, you know, I've had this much success, so you should put, you know, this guy who I'm telling you to put, you know, in the game there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, you talking about that, Justin, really brings me back to the days when I was working these games, and I think you've experienced this too. A lot of the agents think they're doing you a big favor by sending you a player. And to some degree they are, especially if it's a player who's well-recognized and is going to help your game. But they often forget that you're paying for a flight, you're paying for a hotel stay for a week, you're paying for food. But the best part is you're putting them in front of NFL scouts who are doing nothing but paying attention to their players, vetting them, interviewing them. And it's, in a sense, it brings them to the head of the line because they're just more visible to NFL teams. 99% of the time, teams will have gotten a good look at the players, but when they get that second look and they really get to review things, there's a comfort level that they develop, and it just helps the players' chances of at least getting into camp and perhaps even getting drafted. And it was frustrating to me many times when an agent acted like, you know, some agents would call me 10 times, 20 times a week, really going after me, and then would act like it was almost an entitlement that they would take my player. And so I guess I would caution anyone, especially the young agents out there, to be careful about that, because a person in your position, a person in the position that I held, is fielding, especially as it gets late, maybe 100 calls a day from agents and scouts and any number of people who are lobbying to get players in, and it gets really cumbersome and tiresome and exhausting. And so, I don't know, I guess that was always kind of a source of frustration when the contract advisor didn't recognize that and didn't understand that.
Yeah, for sure. And what you make that point in regards to those guys are getting opportunities to see in front of NFL scouts. And I think basically, especially when we're talking about the non-Power 5 guys, the lower level Division 1, the Division 2, 1AA guys, and you look at a guy
yeah.
like, you know, last year, there was a game in Texas, the College Gridiron Showcase, Trey Walker from Texas
right.
Southern. Okay, you know, not a lot of knowledge about him. He goes down to a, you know, probably the number five All-Star, you know, game that was played
right.
last year, you know,
right.
and is able to have a really great week, shows well against, you know, Division I guys, you know, receivers, and ends up going in the fourth round. He's 136th overall pick last year.
Mm-hmm.
And no one would have said that, mm-hmm. you know, going into that. And, you know,
absolutely
in a couple
not.
Of years ago, you know, Eric Fisher, he goes down to the Senior Bowl, is a MAC
right.
player, and people are like, hey, he's a second-round pick. And the guy shoots
yeah.
all the way up the draft board to the number one overall pick, and it was based on his Senior Bowl. And that's what I try to tell
mm-hmm.
guys is, hey, your film's a huge part of your grade, and especially if you're not a non-Power 5 guy, you got to get into an All-Star
mm-hmm.
game. You got to have a great week of practice. I don't care about the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's the practice,
mm-hmm.
the days. It's the first 3 days that are there, and the players got to get acclimated. It's, you know, it's how fast they learn. It's their interview process. It's seeing how, you know, how they move, and you're getting in front of, you know, over 100, you know, NFL scouts there, and some guys that are doing cross checks that didn't see you, you know, weren't, you know, your area guy who, you know, hadn't seen you, you know, maybe there wasn't another cross checker that came through, not the director of, you know, college scouting that came into your building. So you really got to go ahead and take advantage, you know, of that. And those are what those All-Star games are giving those players, those agents, you know, an opportunity to, you know, to do that. So I think you bring those great points up there, and to kind of direct to those, you know, your core audience and those agents, and hey, how can I get a guy into the NFLPA game, into the East-West Shrine game, and into this, you know, kind of the Senior Bowl, and what can they do once they're in there? Now.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned, hey, there's potentially some other, you know, games that could potentially come up this year. There's obviously some stuff in the future, even some stuff that I'm kind of involved in, you know, potentially getting back and doing some stuff with the All-Star Game business with Hula Bowl. That was potentially this year. We actually pushed it back to 2017 and hope to be able to get down there in Maui and get some things done with the local government there with some different politics that are involved there. But what about these pay-for-play games? You know, I know you talk about that to your audience there, your subscribers. Tell our audience here kind of should they if they're players invited to it, if they're a player, if they're a parent, should they go to these pay-for-play All-Star games?
Well, you know, that's a tough thing, Justin, and I've kind of evolved a bit on those games. The thing I think that you have to recognize about most of those games is, the first rule of any All-Star game is, if NFL scouts didn't attend the game, it didn't happen. You didn't play in the game. I mean, the only reason you go is to be evaluated. And unless a scout's there in person, he's probably not going to watch film. He's probably not going to seriously vet the players. He's not really going to review them. And most of the pay games are played in December. Some are even played in late November at times. And at that point, NFL teams are fully engaged in not only finishing up their evaluations from the season, but they're also setting their board for the All-Star games will be played in January, which is when most of them are played. So you're kind of in a gray area when a lot of scouts have a lot of hard work to do in December, and so they're not going to be able to get out to the games. And again, if they're not there, then why are you even playing in them? Now, I think there is a game that I think is very well run. It's called the FCS Bowl, the National Bowl and the FCS Bowl, two games actually. They're played in Miami. It's run by a guy named Michael Corte, who's a former agent, but no longer in the business. But he does a really good job with the game. I believe last year they had 12 teams represented and even had the kicker who wound up, who's now starting for the Dolphins, who came out of that game. And they had probably a half dozen to a dozen players that either made it on a tryout basis or made it as undrafted free agents. They didn't have any draftees. But that's a pretty good accomplishment for a game like that. I mean, they ask the players to get there on their own. They ask their players to pay, I think, a fee of $650. And then once they get there and they pay their fee, it's all taken care of. Their food, their stay, their travel, everything like that. It's really not an unreasonable ask, in my opinion, because as you know, Justin, these games are so incredibly expensive. And it's so hard to recover your expenses, and it's so easy to lose money, that if you're asking the player to shoulder a bit of the load, sometimes they can find a sponsor, sometimes they have parents, sometimes even an agent will cover that cost. And when you look at the cost of representing a player, which I think that the floor is about $10,000 on a player who's got legitimate NFL interest, $650 is really pocket change by the time you add it all up. Now, again, you may be talking about a player who's on the West Coast and you have to travel in, or there are going to be additional costs, obviously. But I think that teams are starting to recognize that there may be players there, and after all, why not go and take a look at them? They're there. They're all in one place. If nothing else, you can rule them all out. I mean, to some degree, the NFL draft process is kind of a process of elimination anyway. So it's not an easy proposition when you're talking about how to involve your own fees and to come in, you know, and actually spend money to come and play in a game. But at the same time, if you get it evaluated and you get looked at, then I think it's something at least worth discussing. Now, the only game that I would consider that's on a pay basis is the National and FCS Bowl. I've got a good relationship with Michael. I've been able to see how the game has grown. It is advancing. It is improving its personnel level. I think it's gaining respect in scouting communities. The other games I haven't seen get similar traction, so I can't recommend them. Again, even the best-case scenario, you're not sure about those games, about the pay-to-play games, but I think that's the one that I would consider, you know, if I had a son who was weighing these different opportunities. So that's kind of my position on the pay-to-play games.
Now, that game in the past, and I don't know if they changed it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but they were taking non-D1 guys. Is that the same format they're going to use this year without you know, the four or five other all-star games that are played number four, number five there?
Well, they have two games, and the National Bowl, I think it's mainly FCS and FBS, which used to be called Division I players. And then I think the FCS Bowl goes down as far as D3 and perhaps even NAIA teams, D2s, and a sprinkling of a sprinkling of FCS players as well. I don't know exactly where the dividing line is. My impression is that the National Bowl has a little higher grade of players and the FCS is a little lower. But they all come in the same week and they have a combine where the players are able to show their stuff. And that's voluntary, of course, but it's an opportunity to run and do those kind of things that may catch a scout's eye. And then they play their games and then, you know, off they go. And they're done in December. So I'm not exactly sure about that, but that's my level of understanding is kind of how they divide up the game and the talent and that kind of thing. But they're bringing in about 90 players for each game, so they've got around 200 that are there for scouts to come and look at. And again, if the scout's local, and there are a lot of scouts, as you know, Justin, who are in Florida, and even a lot that are in South Florida, if the scout's local, he doesn't have anything else scheduled, he doesn't need to be with the team as they're setting their board, there are worse things that he could do than to spend that week in Florida and check out those players. Again, if nothing else, to mark them off his list and say, look, these guys are definitely not possibilities. If he can do all that in one place without having to travel, then that's a big benefit. I think it's something that's gaining traction with scouts. I think it will continue to.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, and then we'll get back to kind of, you know, the kind of main all-star games. And, you know, we've got the East-West Shrine game on January 23rd, as well as the NFLPA games on January 23rd. I think a big, you know, misnomer for the scouting community, you know, hey, they've got two games. There's three games and two games on the same day, you know. But, again, and, you know, January 30th is the Senior Bowl, obviously the biggest one now. Now, from what I've been told, the NFLPA game invites have started to kind of trickle out there. And I think what, you know, the players need to know is go ahead and accept that. Last year, obviously, 20 guys who had gotten invited to the NFLPA game but didn't accept their invite in time found themselves without an all-star game. And luckily, John Murphy was running the College Gridiron Showcase and ended up taking those 20 guys who had gotten you know, invited into the NFLPA game and didn't do that. This year, with the only being three games, you know, my suggestion is go ahead and if you get an NFLPA game invite and you say, oh, I'm going to play in the Senior Bowl, and everybody thinks they're going to the Senior Bowl. Well, there's only 90 maybe to 100 spots for the, you know, for the Senior Bowl. So take the NFLPA game, and then if the Senior Bowl does come calling, well, then you can make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a big thing. I think that's what happens to guys. And, you know, and because, again, the NFLPA game or the East-West Shrine game, if they don't have an accepted invite, because the guy's sitting on it, you know, and like you've probably experienced and I had experienced before is, hey, you got to give them a deadline, and then you got to go invite number two because you've got a deadline to go purchase flights, get uniforms, mm-hmm. you know, and get everything that's behind the scenes, you know, set up there. So I think that's a huge thing that, you know, agents, players, family members, if you get an invite, accept it, worry about what's, you know, going to come there later. So what what's your thoughts on, you know, the East-West Shrine game, the NFLPA game being on the same date? You know, do you think that's going to be an issue, do you know, this year with only three games?
What I've seen, Justin, it's incredibly frustrating to me that the NFLPA game continues to schedule the Shrine game, especially this year when there are only three games. I mean, they could easily inhabit that week before the Shrine game and make it a 1-2-3 proposition, NFLPA game, Shrine game, Senior Bowl. What instead the NFLPA insists on going head-to-head with the Shrine game, I guess in an attempt to try to become the number two game, and unfortunately, the game kind of can't get out of its own way. What happens is when you've got two games the same week, the West Coast-based scouts wind up going to the NFLPA game, and then the East Coast scouts, where there's a lot more talent, go to the Shrine game. And typically, the way the games have oriented themselves, the NFLPA game has attracted a lot more Pac-12, Mountain West players that wind up in that game. Now there are scouts that are based on the West Coast that have already seen these players. They've already made up their minds about these players. So you're not getting the big eyes, the GM level, the director level scouts who can go in and change their mind based on a week's performance, and maybe move them up the list. So you don't see the big jumps. And I don't think that's something that the NFLPA game has recognized. And as they continue to stubbornly go head to head with the Shrine game, it's going to continue to dog them. I mean, last year, the NFLPA game, which is a solid three, they had 10 players drafted. Well, the Medal of Honor Bowl, which has only been around, had only been around for 2 years, had 10 players drafted as well. And furthermore, the game you already referenced, the College Gridiron Showcase, run by John, who's a friend of both of us, had 10 players drafted as well. There's no way that two games that have less than 2 years of history, both of them, 2 years or less of history, both of them, 3 years put together, should rival the NFLPA game with all the muscle and the juice and the money that's being put into the game. So, but they continue to make, to me, what I would consider rookie mistakes, and they continue to see the effects of that. You know, I also, Justin, you recall when they launched this game, they said, hey, we're going to have juniors in our game, we're going to do what nobody else does, and all those kind of things. Well, NFL teams can't evaluate juniors before the class is certified, which is usually around the 21st, 22nd of the month. So they're bringing in players, and the NFL said, we're not coming to your game. And they kind of had a little bit of a standoff there, and finally the NFLPA relented the second year so the NFL teams could come in, and they went back to their, you know, the policy that everyone else observes. But they kind of had to get the egg off their faces after, you know, coming out and making a big splash about how they're going to bring juniors in, and yeah, it wasn't something they could do. So the NFLPA game, I think, has made some poor decisions that the organizers of the game have, and they continue to, and it's really confusing to me why they would continue to try to force a square peg into a round hole. But that's their choice, and that's their decision.
Yeah, and to bring your point, obviously that first year, no NFL scouts could actually go to the NFLPA game, which was
right.
Amazing because they did have one junior, you know, that was in the game there. So
yeah.
Heard a lot of guys back a number of years ago. Hopefully, now the NFLPA game, there was some talk that they would not play this year, and I know that you had followed that, and they obviously decided to go ahead and you know, play that year and play this, you know, that game this year, and it's great because it gives, you know, a handful of guys, you know, some more opportunities to get in front of that
sure.
there, you know, NFL
sure.
scouts there. We got about five minutes left this show. Kind of where do you see the future of the NFL, college football, all-star games, and kind of any other news and notes that you want to pass here as we wrap up this week's show?
Well, I think that at the top, the Senior Bowl is here to stay. I mean, the NFLPA continues to endorse it and put its brand on the game, and Mobile really embraces it, Mobile, Alabama. And it's become accepted as the unquestioned number one game. And I think that that game has a strong future because it always sells out its tickets, or at least does very well at the gate. And again, the city really loves it. And it's kind of the showpiece calendar for the city of Mobile. The Shrine game has bounced around quite a bit over the last 10 years. I think there was a period of 7 years straight when they didn't play in the same stadium 2 years in a row and often would change cities. They've found a bit more of a home in Florida over the last couple of years, but I still don't think that it's a game that's really financially solvent. It's just hard to sell tickets to these games. The NFLPA game, we'll see. I think the jury's still out to some degree. They, as I mentioned, they still are making some of the rookie mistakes that they've been making since for a long time, and I believe they have 5 years of history now. But it's not a game that's really taken off, and despite what the organizers would love to believe, it's not challenging the Shrine game for the number two spot on the list. And so I hope that the game sticks around, but right now I think it still has some challenges and some hurdles it's got to get past before we can really say it's a game that's going to have legs. As far as, and again, the other games, I think we talked about just about that, Justin. There may be a couple other that pop up on the screen here in the next month or so, but right now those are the three that are definitely going to be part of the landscape for 2016.
Gotcha. Well, definitely, keep an eye out there, see if there's these games, these other games that Neil's speaking about, they pop up. Neil will obviously break that news and have that news on, his site and, as far as his Twitter and everything else that Neil's able to do there. What do we see coming up this week on Inside the League and Succeed in Football?
Well, we'll continue to talk about the games, of course. We'll talk about recruiting whispers and murmurs and, the buzz that's on the street. We're hoping to talk about the NFLPA meeting that just took place with veteran agents, where it was some topics were introduced about how some changes that the players want to make, and that could have a significant impact on the game. On Succeed in Football, today is War Story Wednesday, so we'll have something probably from a scout or someone else in the business. Last week, you were helpful in providing the story about Kyrie Robinson, which I thought was outstanding, and kind of wrap the all-star process in there as well. As a Saints fan, I always love to hear stories like that. And Kyrie's been a real warrior for the team. And we'll just continue to kind of keep our ear to the ground and try to follow the pulse of the game.
Well, yeah, and definitely. Obviously, we had our first signing, Miles Jack, we talked about on our first show. He signed with Octagon, left school and is out there training for the 2016 NFL draft. There's some other guys who have some off the field issues or some injuries. We saw Duke Williams get kicked off of Auburn. Now, will he sign with an agent? Neil will obviously follow that, be able to break that down on Inside the League. And next week we'll have another show, Inside the Football Business. We'll get into different topics as we get closer to signing period for agents. As far as maybe we'll get some all-star games in regards to true invites that guys have accepted. Hopefully we'll be able to break some news, get that information as we go throughout this this show and this process here. So we appreciate all the listeners, the people who have supported. We've gotten some nice tweets, both me and Neil, in regards to, hey, you guys are liking the show. So we'll keep rocking, we'll keep going, and hopefully you guys keep listening. And hey, if you have any show ideas, you guys want to know anything, you guys want to say, hey, guys, talk about this subject, can you bring this up? Can you, kind of give me some more information about, this and that? So definitely check that out. Football Next Level, I've posted some videos about the NFL Combine, really what I think is the most important parts, the medical, the interview process, and then the on-the-field events. It was a video I did yesterday, so go check that out on footballnextlevel.com, and it's also on my YouTube channel. So we'll see you next week. And Neil, you have a great week, and look forward to talking to you next week on Inside the Football Business.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it already.